Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 72 of the Xbox Four Gamers podcast. This week, hosting-wise, it's just me. We're going to change up the format a little bit. We're going to keep it a pretty tight show. But I've got our special guest with here with us, our good mate, Odrin. How you doing?
Not too bad. Thanks for having me back on. It's been way too long. I always feel like whenever we don't do an episode, I have like bouts of periods where I end up just forgetting to like message people and all this other stuff. So I'm glad that you reached out because I've been eager to talk to you and the rest of the guys in a while.
Yeah, I 100% know what you mean. I mean, I always love our episodes because we always have some fantastic conversations, and but you know, life always gets in the way and there's always so much going on. So it's absolutely happy to have you on. Thank you so much for making some time for us.
Thanks, Billy.
Now, I'll do our intro spiel. As always, we're doing the show live on Twitch, so you can come hang out with us. Xbox Hall of Gamers is the place to find us. Come hang out in the chat, ask questions, say hi, shitpost, whatever you want to do. We greatly appreciate our audience interaction. Now, normally I would transition us to the song of the week, but I'll be honest, I haven't got one this week. I haven't had time, and with it just being me and Odrin, we would just be awkwardly sitting here while he just has to listen to me sing. Which is funny in one way or another. I figure we'll probably just get straight into it. So Odrin, I mean, we'll just have a chat with you. How have you been? Like, what have you been up to?
I'm good. I think since the last time we spoke properly, I've finished my master's in media and broadcast production. And then alongside that, I just finished, thank you. I also just finished a diploma in digital marketing. So finding more ways than one to just fill up a CV with degrees that will likely never get me a job.
you never know. I mean, I get you, but I mean, you know, like digital marketing is obviously very close to my heart, but I get you.
Yeah. Fingers crossed. We'll say, I won't say anything, cause maybe by some miracle I'll have something by the next time we talk. I've been finishing up those. So that's been taking up the majority of the chunk of my time. But alongside that, then I've also moved. I mean, the last time we spoke, I was in like a single room apartment. Now I'm kind of have a bit more space to kind of do stuff, which is great. I've moved back down to Dublin in Ireland. So I'm much more happy to have a bit more space. The sun is back, which is great. The last few months have been absolutely woeful for weather, which is par and course for Ireland. But it's nice to kind of have all this nice stuff here. I suppose on sort of content stuff, I mean, been doing a lot of more so focused on podcast and video work. I've also been writing a good bit. I was for a while contracted out there for work at Game Ranks, writing news, which was a really, really interesting experience. Fun, I would say, in some regards as well. But it's kind of like, it's nice to kind of have that first sort of stepping stone in the actual industry of working there. But yeah, no, that's what I've been up to.
Oh, fantastic. I mean, it sounds like you've been very busy. in and amongst that, I've seen you've just been some news around Gaming Sandbox and Indie Insight and some of the other stuff that you've been working on in the past have kind of made a bit of a comeback.
Yeah, so it's strange because you're dead right. It has made a kind of a reboot, if you will. Not even a full reboot, just kind of I took a step back for a month in December because like when you're writing in the games industry, it can be really draining to then go back and have your hobby also be the same thing. So a huge portion of that was I was kind of falling out of love with it. And I didn't want to get too burnt out on doing something that realistically is meant to be something that I enjoy and that I like doing. And this kind of bleeds into a bigger conversation of like, when I was sitting down to play games, usually my thought process would be, what can I write about regarding this game as opposed to actually just enjoying it? So I wanted to take a month out just to play games that I wanted to play. And I played some of the most enjoyable games like that I played last year in December without kind of that worry of needing to think, oh, how do I get an article out of this? Or how do I monetize content out of this or something like that? That will, you know, it's not for a predatory aspect. It's more so to pay my bills. Sure. But like, you know, it's kind of there is that element to creating written work or video work behind games that, you know, I wanted to avoid for a month. And then coming back when I kind of started doing Gaming Sandbox stuff again, I wanted to focus more on audio and video stuff because that's a kind of the way my passion is blowing a little bit at the moment. Like I don't mind writing, but it was never really my standout point of stuff I wanted to do. I've always enjoyed doing interactions, podcast discussions, because I feel like I'm more articulate in those sort of mediums as opposed to written content. Because I feel like if you're just saying stuff to a camera, there's less likely that you're going to be like, oh, do I want to say this? Oh, I don't know if this is actually good writing. Oh, people have written better stuff than me. Whereas if you're just speaking, like you've said it, it's done, it's out there, and you can kind of just work from there. And you can make improvements to that as well, but that's kind of on a case-by-case basis. And you actually have to be putting out stuff to make improvements on your work. So I focused on that for a bit. That being said, the website has been a little dormant with regards to written content, just purely because of that fact, that I don't really want to dive into written stuff again when I'm still kind of doing it for work. And there is also the other thing as well. It's like, I'd love to put articles on Gaming Sandbox, but that article could be pitched to another publication. I could get paid to write that piece. And then of course, again, that helps with living expenses. So there's kind of a balancing act there of like, well, do you want to, like, I don't know, do you want to maybe pursue this goal of maybe a marketable website in the future, which is not something I'm particularly too fussed about because it's not an angle for Gaming Sandbox at the moment that I think is viable at all, given sort of the stats and the viewership on the website. Maybe we have like one or two articles that do very well, but then there's a lot of stuff that gets less than 100 views. So you're like, nah, I'm not too fussed. Whereas the video and audio stuff, I mean, I can put that in Gaming Sandbox because I have no outlets to kind of push that onto at the moment. So I'm kind of like, let's build a portfolio of stuff that I really enjoy and kind of focus on the stuff that makes me happy in the game sphere. So kind of working on that. I hope that explains it. I don't know if, yeah, I kind of mishmashed around it.
No, that's fantastic. No, it's great to hear, because again, that's kind of what you've been up to and kind of your thought process, which is kind of what I'm trying to get into there. Because I think that makes a lot of sense. I mean, like, you know, even from our earliest discussions when we first met, was, you know, we were doing podcasts and video stuff and all that kind of things. And I think, you know, that's absolutely fantastic. While we're talking about that, actually, I wanted to talk about this sort of Iron Lung sort of doco that you made, and kind of how that came about. Maybe give it a bit of an introduction for those who haven't seen it. But be keen to hear kind of what happened.
Yeah, so the Iron Lung doc is based off the game that came out, I believe it was March 11th, because I should know this because we did it a year after, March 11th, 2021, Iron Lung, this sort of horror experience. I dare to call it a game because it's kind of more minimalistic in that sense of approach. It's less than an hour long. You're kind of submerged in this submarine with no windows. You have to go kind of charting areas of this blood ocean, which is pretty much just the sea, but it's full of blood. And there's a lot of extra stuff behind that, but I won't get into kind of story elements of that. But on a brief sort of synopsis basis, the gameplay wise, you're going from point A to point B, taking pictures of anomalies and kind of stuff to bring back in the charts. Meanwhile, while your oxygen tank is going down, while your kind of sub is very much degrading over time. So I kind of initially wanted to do a piece on this because, one, I saw the 1 year anniversary is coming up, and I remember how much of an important game that was to me last year, because I really, really enjoyed it, just kind of because it kind of dropped out of nowhere. And the doc kind of explains why that is the case, because, you know, David, the game's creator, David Szymanski, kind of talked about how this game wasn't really something he was thinking was particularly great, which is again like one of those fantastic elements of like, you are your own worst critic, when like he didn't think it was that good and then he published it and now it's his most successful game of all time, or at least the ones that he's self-published, because he's also the creator of indie games like Dusk and all that, and Dusk is a huge thing in the indie space, which ties in nicely, because the only reason kind of I think this interview got done in such a good time and the video came out was because I had interviewed David before. And that was back in 2021. I interviewed David just before the release of Dusk 82, which was kind of this mini add-on but it was a mini game version of like a sort of a 2D top-down version of Dusk, with completely different game mechanics. And so I knew David through there, and I've interviewed his brother before as well, John Szymanski, who's working on this game, MFN at the moment, My Friendly Neighborhood, which is kind of a Resident Evil kind of mash with Five Nights at Freddy's style survival horror game, which is also fantastic. And I hope to maybe do something with that in the future. But I had interviewed David before, pretty much is what I'm getting at here. And I was like, okay, this is a game I really like. This is a developer I know is like really good when you kind of put a camera in front of them and kind of they're able to talk about their project and their thought process behind it. And it's one of those benefits as well of talking to solo devs is the fact that they do everything on the project. So it's not a case of like, you know, and not that I have anything against this, of interviewing different artists or interviewing story writers and whatnot. It's the case of like, you know, if there's a specific angle I want for a game, I'll talk to maybe the lead writer or something like that. But in Iron Lung's case, it's really great to have someone who worked on the game as a whole, so you can explore every opportunity and all those creative decisions with the one person. So I knew I wanted to make something on that, like maybe a few months before March, maybe beginning of January time, early February as well, was when I kind of started pushing that idea. And that's where that came from.
Oh, fantastic. I've watched the video and it's great. I mean, Iron Lung is one of those games that it just exploded onto the scene, especially like in the sort of, in the indie space, both, but also on like the Twitch and that kind of, again, it felt like a kind of perfect marriage of that, like short, very sort of, you know, I don't want to say like walking sim, right? But it's more of an experience than a like strict game, right? Again, it is very much like you're kind of going from point A to point B. And it's very much about the atmosphere and the feeling of it, which is, you know, claustrophobic and horrifying. But also, you know, there's a lot to that. And seeing a lot of like, you know, Twitch streamers and all that kind of stuff kind of sink their teeth into it, because it's like, hey, this is a really interesting kind of experience that I can show to my audience. I think it was, fantastic documentary and a really, really interesting game. Is this a format that you're looking to kind of push forward and kind of do more of those kinds of things with developers and like those kinds of interviews and, you know, sort of longer form content?
Yeah, no, 100%. That's the kind of the case I want to do it. The one thing I'm really proud of with the Iron Lung video is that it was, it had its own separate doc piece that could be experienced on its own, but also had this companion podcast, which was a much more broader length 1 hour discussion. Because that's the one thing I always kind of, that always kind of baffled me a little bit about when I did interviews of news or politics or whatever when I was working previously, is that like you'd have all this content, or maybe like you'd have a 1 hour discussion with someone and then you'd only get maybe like 10-15 minutes of that. And then it also alleviates, you know, not that Iron Lung documentary is ever going to have this sort of like criticism levied at it that it's kind of out of context. Sure. So it allows for that element of like, well, here's the full 1 hour conversation with all the context you could possibly need. And it's nice because I like podcasts more than videos a lot of the time, because if I'm going somewhere, I'll always listen to a podcast. Like I favor it over listening to music a lot of the time as well, because I like to think that, you know, the way your brain tricks yourself, it's like, oh, I'm actually learning something if I listen to a podcast, even sure. if it's just people shouting on about games like half the time.
That's basically what's got this podcast through the last year and a half. So I'm 100% with you.
No, but it's great, like, because I mean, I like the podcast format so much more. So I wanted to have this podcast element. But yeah, you're dead right. And the formatting of the way this doc and the podcast stuff works is something I want to pursue in the future. And it's stuff I've been angling to pursue for a long time. And it's actually where I kind of started out making video content, was through podcasts, because I did a political series in Ireland, kind of talking to all the major different parties, youth wings, kind of talking about like the young people who were looking to get into politics, where would this happen? And there was a gap in the market at the time for that, because it was like, you know, politics is always kind of relevant, especially just before COVID and even during COVID when that kind of blended into it. But there was never really any resources for young people in Ireland to kind of see where would you start with that. So I did stuff on that. So the format isn't particularly new to me in that sense. That's a lot of stuff that adapted over. Obviously, it's not political at all, the stuff I do now, but the process of, asking for an interview, engaging in the interview, getting the questions set up, editing the video, all that format, and so on. And luckily that's been kind of boosted up a little bit by my own technical knowledge expanding over the last few years. And I mean, the visual aspect of the Iron Lung documentary is tenfold better than anything I did maybe back in 2019, 2020, which is the real reason I want to keep pushing this format, is because I want to learn more about the sort of the video production process. I want to be able to edit videos and make them look better. I want to, you know, use more of the, because I pay for the entire Adobe suite. I don't just want to use Premiere Pro and Audition.
Yeah, gotcha.
I want to use After Effects and I want to use Photoshop and I want to learn all those different bits and pieces. So it's a case of like, yes, I'm making content that I want people to be more entertained in, that's more palatable, more bite-sized for some people if they want that, and more long form if they don't. But I also want to feel like I'm getting something out of it, like that I'm learning new techniques or something as I go along. So yeah, I mean, I mentioned at the beginning, I prefer doing the more in-person stuff. And there is one in-person doc that I'm currently editing up at the moment alongside, you know, other stuff we've talked about. I mean, of course, I did an interview with you and you reached 2 million gamer score, which I feel like at this stage, I might as well just do it when you hit 3 million. because it's been so long since I did that.
I mean, yeah, it was. Obviously, I don't want to shill too hard for something that I'm in. I'm you know, definitely excited to see that come out. It wasn't that long ago. I mean, I'm only at like, you know, 2.2 million now. So it's like, you know, you got heaps of time before we have to do the 3 million video.
Well, it does worry me a little bit, because the whole reason I think a main reason of actually, this is an interesting conversation topic, because before I started doing interview stuff, I did a lot of sort of game focused videos that I did as solo projects. And there's a difficulty for me when making content is, one, if I'm not getting paid for it, I'll have a very short attention span. I want to do something. And that's not to say that like I'm only in stuff for the money. It's more so the fact that like, you know, my brain is constantly thinking of new ideas. And if something cooler comes up in my mind, I'm like, I want to go do that. So I could have like I constantly do this now. I have like an Excel spreadsheet of all the video ideas, and I must have over 100 ideas that I think are all genuinely very decent ideas that I could source something out of. Like I've talked about doing stuff about like more sound design focused on games, because that's a particular passion I have. Music and games also as well. But I've never gotten around to it because I have such like spurts of enthusiasm in them, if that makes sense. Sure. Whereas like, so when, sorry, this big tangent is to kind of bring back to a point of like, the reason I started doing more interview style stuff was because if I'm beholden to someone else who's in an interview, I'll feel more inclined to finish it because I know that they'll want to see it.
For sure.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. There's other stakeholders involved for sure.
Yeah. So that's why I have a few projects on the go at the moment. And I'm always conscious. Like, I know I've messaged you like a few times being like, it is coming. And as much as you say like, oh, yeah, that's fine. Like whenever, like it's in my head that I'm like, okay, I need to get this done because like it's been nearly a year since we did that recording. And I'm like, I want to get this done, if not for my sake, but for Matt's.
I mean, look, I won't lie. I'm very excited to see it. I mean, to be honest, I can barely remember what I said in that. So it'll be a surprise to me too at this stage. But no, I think it's great. Like and to sort of echo some of the stuff you were talking about, like the things you're learning about the like from a technical perspective. I really love what you did with the video side of it. Of the Iron Lung documentary. Like the visual stuff you did with the camera being basically on the scanner and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, even small things like it's those things that, you know, really take it above to, you know, rather than just having people sitting there talking and just kind of doing a bit of back and forth. Right. Which obviously has its place, but I think that like having that extra level of production really, really elevates it. What else have we got on there? Do you want to talk any? Is there anything you want to talk about with Complete Xbox and kind of that announcement? And that was a little bit ago. Kind of what's happening there?
Yeah, I'm actually really happy that you brought it up, actually, because it had completely slipped my mind, which is, again, not a fault on Complete Xbox at all. It's just the fact that it's just so much stuff like that I have to try and remember sometimes that it kind of gets overwhelming. But the Complete Xbox stuff is really, really interesting. So Complete Xbox is pretty much, again, an Xbox-centric website that does all this sort of written content. And, you know, it's not a case of like, you know, I just happen to be very good friends with a lot of the people who are involved with the Complete Xbox team. I mean, there's another couple of... for context, I should really apply this. So
sure.
About a month ago, I think it's a month ago at this stage anyways, there was this establishment of the Complete Xbox community, which was kind of more so just a collaborative approach to content creation, which was between myself and a couple of other creators, namely Thistledew Gaming, Duncan Voices, Indie Choices, and then, of course, Complete Xbox themselves. And the idea was that, you know, we all know each other. We all get on very well with each other. Complete Xbox has access to kind of all these different publishers and developers for if you want to get codes for games or whatever, or kind of set up interviews to kind of almost allow us as content creators to kind of avoid one aspect of kind of all the work that's coming up. So like if we, or not even avoid it, but kind of mitigate it to another factor in which it benefits both of us. So the whole process started with, you know, we were like, oh, let's do this collaborative process. And we're doing a podcast for that now. I do one with Duncan every 2 weeks, which I really, really enjoy. But alongside that, you know, The complete Xbox stuff has given us the opportunity to look at new stuff. There's a couple of reviews and interviews that I've done for the website, but also alongside that, interviews that I'm getting developers early for, which is great because it means I can work on stuff a lot more. And I can talk a little bit about that in a second. But yeah, it was pretty much just a whole group of people coming together to kind of work on each other's content. And it provides an area as well for people to kind of ask for advice on different forms of content creation, because the great thing about it is that, like, my content being so sort of interview or documentary focused now, as opposed to say something that Duncan does, which is kind of more short space content or maybe sort of more comical sort of skits about video games and indie games, versus what This'll Do does, which is kind of weekly content with different series and all that, kind of focused on gameplay and how this game is to play with friends and everything. It means that we've got this kind of diverse background of content creation and where we can kind of come up with ideas and get those different perspectives on, which I really, really appreciate as someone who for ages has kind of worked solo wise and kind of had to fumble through the dark, if it will, for like trying to figure out if something sticks or not. So yeah, the whole complete Xbox community thing was a great idea. And that doesn't mean that I just cover Xbox stuff, by the way. That's sure. Just kind of the fact that that website is an Xbox-centric website. I mean, I still do a lot of PlayStation stuff as well, because, I mean, there's a lot of great stuff on PlayStation, so I'm not going to throw out a complete element of the market, especially
sure.
In the
no, for sure. Like,
well.
Yeah, you know, that would be a ridiculous idea. I don't know why anyone would put Xbox in the name of their podcast and just basically cut off, you know, 80% of the community.
That wasn't a dig, by the way.
No, I know. I just couldn't help myself. Because trust me, I mean, it's an interesting one, but no, I'm totally with you, right? It's like, I mean, gaming is gaming no matter what platform it's on. There's opportunities everywhere and there's stories to be told.
Yeah. But yeah, I think that about covers it really. Unless I've completely, misinterpreted the question you wanted to ask.
I mean, again, just so we can get it out there and obviously just people get an idea of the kinds of things you're working on and all the places you're at. Speaking of which, I also want to touch on the Monday Movie Madness podcast that you do.
Yes.
Presumably most Mondays, I assume, would be the...
Well, you would think that, wouldn't you?
You would, right?
If you get delayed with stuff, then it's not coming out on Monday, which has been the case recently. And I feel so bad for my co-host, Chris, who I do the podcast with each week, because, like, he's fantastic. Like, the way we kind of split up the work is that I'll do the... So the way in which the podcast forms is nearly an hour discussion on a certain film, and there'll be intersections of clips when we talk about stuff, not too many that it'll be copyright infringement and whatnot, but little elements of bits to kind of add that little bit more personality to the podcast. So the way we've it split up at the moment is that I'll do sort of the podcast cut and the audio editing, and he'll source the clips and send them on to me. So it's a nice balance of work so that we're not both kind of burnt out on it. But kind of over the last few weeks, the problem has been that since I'm working freelance now, there's a lot of opportunities that just come up that you have to go and do. Like, you can't just say no to them. So that's why stuff has been delayed a little bit. But at the beginning, when we did it, oh my God, week after week, we were on par. It was fantastic. It's a podcast series I really enjoy. Like, the fact that we take a movie every week or a TV show every month. Well, I think we've changed that now to every 2 months because TV shows take a lot longer to kind of dissect and all that. Sure. If we're going to be doing that. And it's such a breath of fresh air from games, because if you want to review a game, you have to sink like maybe 30 hours into it sometimes. Whereas with a movie, you sit down for maybe an hour to 2 hours, maybe two and a half at most, and then you're just done. And then you can get into it. Like, I don't mean to like degrade the podcast in any way, but like, there's been days where like I've sat down before the podcast recording, watched the film, and then gone immediately into it.
Fresh in your mind, right? I mean, nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, but I love that sort of stuff. I mean, it has a website too, but like that website is like, it's not a business account on WordPress. It's just us kind of putting up stuff there just if you want. Like, if we write anything, it'll go up there. It's very much the kind of the small scale hobby side of content creation. It's not like Gaming Sandbox or anything like that. But I've been really enjoying that since we started back in August. And it's mad to think it's actually been that long since we started doing it. I really, really enjoy that sort of stuff.
Yeah, I'm totally with you, because I mean, film is a big passion of mine that I don't get to talk about all that much on here, for example. So it's great to give that a listen and kind of hear you guys' thoughts. And I mean, you were watching a lot of movies day by day, right? I was keeping up on your Twitter
Yeah. This is another problem as well, that like I have this brilliant idea in my head. Like, so my idea was to do Like, because I'm always thinking in my head of like, what's an idea I'd like to do, but also one that has a catchy thumbnail or singer.
Sure.
And my idea was like, I went to the cinema every day for 30 days. And I'm like, that sounds like, that's kind of, it's an interesting fun one. Like, I'd click on that video.
Yeah.
I think it'd be interesting. And I was like, okay, let's do it. Little did I know that, you know, I have actual stuff to do. So I can't just go to the cinema every day for 30 days. It's not my job to do that. So it's sure. unfortunate that I can't do that. So I think I got to day four. And that was a bit...
I mean, you know, like, but, to be fair, that, yeah. that's more movies than most people watch in 4 days. So.
Yeah. Well, I have to say, the only reason I decided to do that was because I don't know if you have Odeon in New Zealand, do you?
No, I don't believe so.
No, so we have Odeon over here, which is kind of a cinema chain, and they have this thing called a Limitless Pass, which is pretty much a monthly subscription to the cinema, and you can go see as many movies as you want. Gotcha. And it costs me €16 a month to go to the cinema as much as I want. And I'm like, you know what? Like, if I go and see two movies, I've saved money. So
sure.
I'll just get as much use out of this as possible. So it was actually great because the time I got it, I mean, a lot of the Oscar movies were coming back into cinema. So it meant the stuff that I had missed that I want to watch in the big screen, like I was able to go and see. So I went to see stuff like All Quiet on the Western Front, Tar on Colleen Kuhn. I saw Banshees of Inisherin, which I'd already seen like three times prior, but I just love that film so much for obvious reasons. But like, yeah. Yeah, I went to see a lot of that stuff again, which, you know, it's great because, I mean, it actually made me realize how much I loved the cinema because I forgot how, because during COVID, obviously, you didn't go to the cinema. And then afterwards, I think I was so like in the mindset of not going to the cinema that I didn't go back.
Yeah.
Whereas before that, like when I was in my first year of my undergrad in college, like I had the same pass for Odeon. It was more expensive back then, so you had to kind of get the value out of it. But I was going to the cinema maybe once every week. So I was going to see new stuff now and then, whether it was terrible or not. I think I went to see Venom three times in Odeon just to get the value of it.
Yep.
Which really isn't an experience I would recommend to anyone. It's very close to like, I'm glad that I, like, it's not Morbius, but like it's three Venom films.
You can tell it came from the same studio, right? Like there's a lot of connective tissue right there.
Yeah, definitely much. A lot of dark toned colors, no real brightness to it at all. The second film was maybe a little bit better because Carnage is red, but it was still woeful. But yeah, no, I kind of like, I fell out of, not fell out of love with the cinema. Like it was more of a forced falling out of love because of COVID.
Sure.
But I was glad to get to go back to the cinema and do that stuff again. And it means that I'll probably go and see a lot of stuff now that maybe I wouldn't go and see. And that's the big problem is because I feel like when you're going to the cinema, I feel like I only ever used to go to the cinema to watch like Marvel stuff. And then
big blockbuster
maybe I go
stuff,
and see, big blockbuster stuff. And then every now and then I go see something great. But like the benefit of like having gone to the cinema since like I got the pass was that I saw films like After Sun, again, Banshees, which I probably wouldn't have gone to see. Only it was only I kind of opened up my mind to like looking at other films. And obviously I love Colin Farrell and Brendan Gleeson and Irish actors in general. So I went to see a load of other stuff that maybe I possibly wouldn't have gone to see. I went to see Coda last year, which was the Oscar winner, which I don't know how it got that. But I mean, I have this claim that the one cinema I've gone to, I've seen the two Oscar winners. I saw Coda and then I saw Everything Ever All at Once. So maybe that's the blessed spot. Like I just have that's to go the there one. When I watch my films. But yeah, no, I'm glad to kind of get back into the whole stuff of cinema and all that. And it's also, it's a nice change away from games as well, not only just for the time difference, but because I don't feel qualified enough to talk about like films because like I enjoy them, sure. And I'll write about like my experiences with them. I think specific movies I'll have a draw to like say Banshees of Inisherin because it's Irish and all that other stuff that there's an added perspective here in Ireland of talking about Irish film creation. Not to mention that film is funded by British companies and won Best British Film at the BAFTAs. So, you know, it again says a lot about the Irish film industry that like some of that stuff just isn't funded here. So, I mean, there was more conversations around that and being able to write about that would have been interesting. But when I go to the cinema, I'm purely there for a good time, not to do anything else. So it's a nice switch off period.
Yeah, I mean, that's the dream, right? Is to have a hobby away from your hobby. I totally know what you mean. We've been talking for a little bit, so let's maybe get into some of the community questions. We've got a couple of them this week. Let's have a look. So we've got one here from our good friend Isaac, who writes in most weeks. He says, "Hey guys, I've been playing a lot of DLC lately. What are some of the best or worst DLCs that you played? Thanks for taking my question." Well, thank you for asking, Isaac. I don't know. I mean, do you have anything that sort of springs to mind DLC wise? I mean, it's DLC's been around for quite a while since Horse Armor, right? So there's a lot to pick from.
I actually have two. I think two ones that kind of fundamentally made me go back to a game, because I think that's the core point of a DLC, sure, is to make you want to go back.
Yeah.
The Alan Wake DLC for Control was fantastic. That's something that actively made me go back and play Control. And that's unfortunate, because Control is a game that you need to get into the groove of, so jumping straight into the DLC can feel a bit jarring. But that was fun. And then alongside that, the Ascension DLC for Housemarque's Returnal. Which added in co-op is something that I absolutely adore, that I've played far few little of, that I need to find someone again to play that with, because I love the idea of like this relatively difficult roguelike game where you can kind of call in your friend and enjoy it. And I think that was kind of some of the appeal of more recent games as well, not roguelike in sense, but something like Wolong had co-op in it, and I know a lot of my friends were jumping in co-op to play that. Returnal is kind of that's what itches my stuff. I like the more sci-fi stuff, as opposed to sort of the more feudal Japan, almost fantasy style of stuff. That's like that space opera stuff is always my sort of thing.
For sure.
So those would be my two.
Those are some great ones. I'm just trying to think if there's anything that really jumps out at me like recently. I'm kind of just looking at my list, seeing if there's anything that's like, oh yeah, that was pretty good. A lot of it's just like title updates for trash games, unfortunately. Which is, I mean, you know, it happens. Actually, I will say, I quite enjoyed Immortals: Phoenix Rising when it came out. Mm. I know it's an Ubisoft collectathon with you know a bright palette slapped on top of it, but to be fair, apparently that's all I need to enjoy a game these days. Is for it to be Assassin's Creed but with wings, and I was like, cool, I'm in. But the DLC they did for that, not all of it was great, but they did each of the DLC packs was like something slightly different. So I think the first one was your typical like trials and puzzles stuff, which was fine. But the second one was like they were just like, hey, we're just going to take one of our China teams is going to take the engine and just turn it into a like small little mini adventure that uses the same engine and same kind of mechanics, but is like Chinese themed, Chinese mythology themed. And I was like, wow, okay, yeah, like you don't have to. Like, it kind of reminded me of when Ubisoft used to do things like Far Cry Blood Dragon and that kind of stuff, where they used to take their existing engine and the existing game they'd built and do like a little interesting small spin-off of it. It was really, again, same sort of thing, but like a completely different flavor. And then the third DLC the pack they did would basically change the perspective of the game, gave you a brand new character, and turned the game into like a top-down Diablo style loot game, with, you know, like quest objectives and that kind of stuff and puzzles and combat. And it was like, yeah, like, they, you know, all of this was built off the back of, you know, what was a relatively like a very pretty and like technically competent, but, you know, relatively generic sort of collectathon, Ubisoft climb towers, find objectives kind of game. So I was really sort of surprised with how much I enjoyed that. Cause I wasn't I was expecting it to be a bit of a slog.
But I do love, actually, just speaking on that, when games DLC actually completely fundamentally alters the way in which the game plays, like, as you mentioned, with the top down sort of Diablo style for, Phoenix Immortal Rising.
Immortals, Phoenix Rising.
Okay. Sorry. I mean, that's just me.
The original title of Gods and Monsters was a lot better, but I mean, there must have been some reason there why they didn't stick with it.
But to note on that, though, just like, again, like, I mean, a DLC that people will probably mention is Prey Moon Crash, which kind of fundamentally alters the entire Prey game to just turn it into a roguelike. And it wasn't for me, but I did really appreciate the fact that, like, that was a complete change of form for that game. Already a game that was completely slept on launch, which is unfortunate, because that's kind of the typical thing with Arcane, bar obviously Deathloop, which did fantastic, at least in critics' minds. I don't know if it did well commercially, so don't quote me on that. But
well enough that apparently thinking about doing some more content for it, at least that leaked out a few weeks ago.
I hope so. I really hope so, because I really enjoyed Deathloop. It was kind of an iffy one at the beginning for me, but I like the overall gameplay feel. It's got a cool little art style. I feel like the music absolutely slaps in that game. It's just something. It's a weird mesh between like sci-fi and James Bond, which I absolutely love.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, Brave Moon Crash is another one, I suppose, if you want to add it to the list.
Totally agree. I mean, it's Moon Crash is one of those rare ones that fits in both categories for me, because I love the idea, right? I think it's so, so interesting. Unfortunately, it did ruin the fact that I'd already completed the game 100% and the achievements are quite difficult for it. So I had to go back and finish it. And I'm quite bad at roguelites, right? So like critically, and I have played a little bit of it and it's great and I love it, but also I'm bad at it and it's dropping my completion percentage. So, you know, I'm like, I have to weigh it up a little bit, but no, but in terms, like, seriously though, it is a fantastic, fantastic piece of DLC. Yeah, like this, like, I'm just thinking like stuff with Hitman is fantastic, but again, that's kind of like more episodic.
I'm actually just wondering more so now, like, you know the way you'll only play a game if you can 100% it?
Yes.
Have you ever played a Call of Duty game then?
Yeah, well, I mean, I have done quite a few of them, but I started off strong back in the day. It's like I did Call of Duty 2 and I did like Modern Warfare, the original Modern Warfare, like Call of Duty 4, Modern Warfare 2, Modern Warfare 3. And then it started getting a bit squirrely. I was like, I think I did like Ghosts. And then after that, it was like Advanced Warfare. And then after that, it was like Infinite. They had Black Ops and I did Black Ops 1 and 2. And then it was like Black Ops 3, 4, Advanced Warfare. Like that era of games started getting really, really like heavy on like the zombie side of things. And the multiplayer was like a very, very long game. And I was like, oh, I don't know how long. It was one of those things where... And if you've listened to our audience, you know, go back to the old Real Gamer Score days, I would complain a lot about like, hey, I've got like four DLC packs here for Black Ops 2. And it's like, yeah, I'm terrible at zombies. I need a good group of three who are just going to drag my body through this game so I can get all these achievements. Because like some of these Easter eggs, I'm just like, first of all, how the fuck did anyone figure this out? And second of all, like, I don't understand how this is fun for people. But like it was one of those things where, yeah, exactly. Like I very, very rarely play things like Call of Duty or things that have those huge time investments, or very high skill ceilings, because like if you look at the games I've completed, and I think we maybe talked about this a little bit in our interview last year, it was kind of like I have a lot of like difficult stuff that I've played and completed, right? But most of what I play for now that I'm not super score hunting anymore is more for experiences. I'll put things on the easiest difficulty if I can. I'm really just here. I'm here for a good time, not a hard time, as it were. I'm just like, hey, I just want to like experience these games. I want to osmosis everything that I can about like the feel and the story and the music and the art and everything like that. I'm not really there to bash my head against the wall for 60 hours to get 5 hours of content out of it, if it makes sense. Sometimes I'll make an exception. I love the Dark Souls series and From and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, like Elden Ring was my game of the year last year. So like I will, you know, sometimes I'll get good, but like it's, that's the exception rather than the rule.
I should actually mention, since we're on the topic of gamer score as well, I'm very delighted to announce that I finally got over 100K.
I mean, that's the first big hurdle. It's like the first million, like they say. Like, so you earn the first million, and the other ones just keep rolling in after that. So you'll be fine. You got 100,000. You'll easily. Well, next time we have you on, you'll be rivaling up where I am. So,
yeah, of course, yeah. Don't hold me to that though, but yeah,
I'll book in something for 2060.
Yeah, sure. Xbox servers will be offline by that stage. Oh,
yeah, I'm going to find something else to do with my time. Yeah, I mean, like most DLC is either, like, in my mind, is like relatively inoffensive, like small add-on content that doesn't really evoke much, or it's like really interesting kind of stuff that you don't usually see a lot of, like, really bad DLC come out. The one comment we did get in a thread on our Discord, discord.io/HallOfGamers. You can come hang out with us and hang out with our community. That's where you can ask questions like this. We had some people talking about Indivisible, which I don't know if you remember Indivisible. 2D.
No, I don't think so.
2D Metroidvania with a like turn-based combat system. Really, really beautiful art style. Sort of Southeastern Asian flair to it. Looks really, really nice. Enjoyed it quite a bit for the most part. I mean, I have some issues with it, but completed it. And then they released a DLC pack, which was like a bunch of challenge levels, which were like really challenging. And then basically... the original upload for the Xbox version has some sort of bug in it. So that, like, what, some of the trials are basically impossible to complete in the time that they give you.
Oh.
And so the and then the studio went under right afterwards. So that no one was able to ever fix it. It was fixed. I think it was fixed on PlayStation, but the Xbox patch basically never got released. And so it's one of those things where they have a bunch of basically unobtainable achievements that they bolted on afterwards. And it was the kind of game where I finished it and I was like, oh yeah, this is a complete story. I don't think there'll be anything else for it. And they just snuck in there a little bit. And, you know, I'm not a big fan of like the, hey, you know, do this in this time or do these challenge levels, or yeah, here's a bunch of like stuff we've added to kind of pad the game out a little bit. Like I'm again, like I said, I'm here for an experience. I'm here for a story, you know, something like, I mean, the game that always comes to mind is, two games actually come to mind are Bioshock Infinite, where their first DLC was their Clash in the Clouds combat arena, which makes me pull my hair out, and I still have not fully completed yet, because those blue ribbons can get fucked. But then afterwards, they did Burial at Sea Part 1 and 2, which were some of the most interesting, like, multiverse, like, story content that they'd ever done, and had that sort of interesting connective tissue with the old Bioshocks and all that kind of stuff. And in that same vein, talking about Arkane, Dishonored, the original Dishonored, did the same sort of thing where they had the Dunwall City Trials, which again, another ridiculously difficult set of challenges that I still have never completed. And, you know, just makes me rage. But then also, like, they did the Knife of Dunwall and Witches of, I can't remember the other one, but the sort of two stories about Dowd, which were like narrative experiences, expanded upon the universe, told a really interesting sort of side story, and sort of led it as like kind of a prequel up to the main game, which was like great. Yeah. And like, I love Arkane's work, and I'm hoping we see kind of more of that stuff in the future. And then we have one other question here from our good buddy, Just Jake Reptar himself, says, I got a fun one that's possibly been asked. What sort of industry practices have come up in the last decade or so that you're not a huge fan of? Doesn't have to be anything super huge or like, you know, the kind of stuff that everyone talks about. If there's anything in particular that sort of sticks in our craw. He says stuff that's like timed exclusives. He says, you know, as someone who plays on every platform, but obviously prefers Xbox, it'd rather just be a hard line of whether or not something's going to be on a platform or not. Or at least some transparency around things are going to happen. The most recent memory set of the Final Fantasy Pixel remasters being announced for mobile and Steam. But the minute they were announced, he knew that Square was going to... Basically, the reason was Square wanted people to buy these on those platforms before releasing it elsewhere. And even stuff like... Even recently, you know, things like Deathloop is a good example, right? That had a one-year exclusivity deal with Sony when Bethesda got bought. But Microsoft basically never spoke about the fact that it was ever coming to Xbox, whether that was, I mean, most likely because they have some sort of agreement that was in place that they couldn't do any sort of marketing on other platforms. Ghostwire Tokyo is a similar situation where, it's coming out next month and they only just announced that it's coming to Xbox, in April, you know, the two weeks before its launch.
I don't know if I necessarily agree with the idea that I'd rather just be like pure exclusivity over timed exclusivity. I think having timed exclusivity is definitely a much better,
I would agree,
a much better solution, because even if you don't get to play the game, you're still going to get to play it at some point, as opposed to having to buy a new console to go and play it, which is never, I think, a good idea. I would never buy a console for a single game. But I suppose the other thing is as well, I don't know, this is completely just me just shitting, like, because I don't know anything about like the industry, but like I think the whole thing of like maybe companies releasing games on sort of mobile or Steam before bringing it to other platforms, maybe down to just company costs or like wanting to see if a game will perform well before that happens. I mean, this is all just speculation because I have no idea, and it could be, you know, greedy either stuff and want to get two times the games, but sure. I mean there's some elements of like, I mean, this kind of comes up a good bit with the physical edition stuff, which I don't know up until recently. I think Xbox might have changed it recently, but for a while there was, you had to have a minimum order of physical Xbox games if you were wanting to get them made physically. So that's why you see so many like indie games only have a PS4, PS5 or Nintendo Switch version, was because they weren't sure if they'd get the sales to warrant having an Xbox version. Which I think, yeah, that's one industry practice. I don't think there should be a minimum requirement for getting physical stuff, because I like physical stuff. It's kind of one of those things where, like, I mean, much like vinyls and records, physical games are kind of becoming like the sort of the like, oh, this is cool again sort of thing.
Sure.
But I, yeah, maybe one industry practice I don't like, games as a service. Yep. They've never, but they're just not my thing. I know people love Destiny. And other games like World of Warcraft is, by all means, a game as a service.
I mean, it was the game as a service originally, right? I mean,
people love that. And it's, but I don't know. People speak about games as a service like it's this sort of new phenomenon when like stuff like RuneScape and World of Warcraft and League of Legends have existed for years before this huge conversation about AAA publishers doing more stuff in it.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, because I think that, like, I mean, part of that, I think, is that games as a service, as we're talking about them, were usually relegated to the sort of MMO space, right? Where it was a lot of PC gamers. I mean, look, when I say World of Warcraft player, the kind of person that immediately pops into your mind is kind of maybe the reason why it wasn't so widespread, right? Is the kind of person who was really into those kind of MMO big investment kinds of games. You know, they made a lot of money, and it was obviously, a subset of the community. But I think that as monetization has gotten bigger in the console space and become more normalized among, you know, typical gamers, outside of the kind of, you know, core audience that kind of you and I probably fit into, that it's permeated more as more acceptably that it's like, hey, we're like every game now has a battle pass. Every game is now seasons of content planned. We've all got microtransactions all the way through it. We want to make sure that we're not just getting all your money, but also all of your time. So I'm with you on the games as a service, but
I'll tell you one industry practice I despise, and I don't know if this is really a practice. Well, it has to be a practice. Games that are over 150 gigabytes. Like, yeah. I'm sick and tired of it. Like, I don't want just Call of Duty on my console and nothing else. Like, it's like, yeah, I want to play Warzone every now and then, but like, don't make me kind of like purge my entire system in order to give it a go. I think, and I have to imagine that this is some form of like, if we take up the space in your console, you will be forced to play our game.
It's a little bit like tinfoil hat, right? Where it's like, they're definitely planning all this out, but like, I could see it, you know, like they're but part of it is like, hey, we get to optimize this game less, and we don't have to, you know, compress everything down, and we don't have to do all this extra work on these games that we're, you know, like, especially in like Call of Duty case, trying to get out year on year, that are, you know, big multi-million dollar blockbuster games that we need to make a shitload of money on. They need to be out day.
I personally worry to see what the size of this game will be by the time the next one comes out, because they're doing the 2 year thing, aren't they?
Yes.
At the moment. And like, I mean, it's fair to say, I mean, similar size games, I mean, at the moment, like Forza Horizon 5, Halo MCC, Halo Infinite is getting there. It's at like 70, so it's still fine. But like, I downloaded Cold War the other day, 246 gigabytes of space. And like, I didn't want to play all of that, but it does this thing. It's the same with like Gears 5 as well, where like, it has these systems in place where you can install what you want, save your stuff. But it's just like, but first we need to install all of it. And I'm just like, well, I don't want the... Yeah, because I remember wanting to play Gears 5 multiplayer, but I had to wait for the campaign to install. It's like, I don't want to play the campaign. The same goes for Halo MCC as well, where it's like, okay, we need to install Halo CE. It's like, when am I playing that outside of wanting to just do the campaign every like once in a blue moon? Because that game, controversially, just doesn't hold up as well as Halo 3 ones.
Halo 3 is the best one. I mean, I'm not...
Yeah, and Halo CE multiplayer is fine to go into, but once you play one or two games of that, you're over it, and you want to go back to the new stuff.
Or Reach if you're really into doing the armor lock stuff, which, like, you know, we've got some sickos out there, I suppose.
Get rid of huge gigabyte games. That's one thing I say. Maximize being able to like push your byte size down. I mean, Doom Eternal did this so well, where it was like, I think Doom Eternal overall, I don't know if it was the case now, but when it released, it was smaller than Doom 2016.
Wow.
But it felt like a much bigger game. I think it was only about like 40 or 50 gigs, which I know it's still a lot, but like in confines of this, like in the way AAA games come out now, like that was really, really good. And I really appreciate it for that, because Yeah, I can have Doom Eternal on my console and play it whenever. The same goes for, like, I played a game recently. It hasn't come out yet, but the embargo's lifted, so I can talk about it. But I played this game called Dredge, which is made by a New Zealand team, Black Salt Games.
Mm-hmm.
Their game is, like, literally a gigabyte, and it's huge. It's so good. And I love the fact that it's this huge open space area. And I was looking, like, what's the size of this game? And you always look at indie games, like, how is it this small? But AAA developers are still struggling with the concept of something below 10 gigabytes. Like, Disco Elysium is 8 gigabytes. And the plethora of content in that game, like, is ridiculous. Whereas, like, I go into Call of Duty, it's like 159 gigabytes and it still crashes like every turn. And I'm just like, how? Like, please, like, explain it to me. I feel like, you know, the way people used to criticize FIFA games for being like this, like, year on year, just updated skins and rosters. Mm-hmm. I feel like Call of Duty now has very much become like this. Here's the same game, but we've, like, kind of just, like, I don't know, we've, like, stuck someone else's art on it. And that's not to, like, I mean, the artwork and visual designers and everything, and obviously all those companies in Activision are probably working really hard on this stuff, but, like, I don't, like, what happened to, like, games being like no game was this big. Even Black Ops 3, which it probably has the most amount of in-game content, you could say, maybe bar Warzone, was not as big as any of these games. But, like, I feel like the Call of Duty series is just going to keep getting bigger and bigger, both physically and metaphorically speaking. I want games to be smaller. That's an industry practice. I want to come back and get rid of the bigger titles.
I totally agree. I mean, like, I when I got my Series X, I was, like, considering, oh, do I need to get the expansion card, like, to sort of increase the space on it, because it's got and I was like,
and the price is mental.
I mean, it's insane. Like, insanely expensive, because obviously it's all proprietary bullshit. So I was looking at it, and I was like, you know what? I'm probably good. Like, games are big, but I don't really play that many all at once. And I was like, I have like 10 games installed on my console now. But it's like, I ended up with Modern Warfare 2, the new one. And that was, like 100, 150 gigs or whatever it was. And then I have Forza Horizon 5, because I still need to, they just released the new DLC for it. And I need to do the Eliminator as well, or the DLC. Yeah, I think DLC is just coming out today. So I've got one achievement left on the Eliminator.
More Forza content. Amazing. I really like Forza. Just talking about the size, sorry.
But I'm with you, right? But it's huge. And I was like, I don't. And then I had Doom Eternal installed, because I'm working on that as well. And I'm like, I'm rapidly running out of room. Luckily, the things I've been playing have been Persona 4 and 3, which are ports of PlayStation 2 games, and are like 8 gigs at most. And I'm like, it reminded me of the days where I'm just like, it was when they first released the ability on the 360 to, like, rip the games, or to, like, install the games from your disc onto your hard drive so that it would run better and you wouldn't have to spin the disc. And it was like, the games were 7.8 gigs. That was like the standard. And it was like, you just, like, that's how much space you have to put in a game. Figure it out. And now it's just like, it's like, that's fucking, it's the Wild West out there. They just don't care. There might be something to them being like, if all your space is taken up by, three Activision games, then you're definitely not going to be putting an Ubisoft game on there. So, that's a win in their book.
Yeah. I also think maybe some of the onus of the blame is on me, because I still do want to play Warzone and, like, all that other stuff. So, like, the easy solution to, like, getting rid of big games is just delete them. But, like, it's like, I want to play it, though. It's just an addictive, like, loophole, unfortunately.
No, for sure. Gaming practices for me, I think I echo a lot of that sort of stuff. Like, I'm very tired of games as a service as just a thing that kind of, I definitely think games as a service has its place. But I think that place is mostly in the sort of free to play space. And the fact that, I'm assuming
even still, like,
I know that it's kind of like, it feels like they're kind of fleecing you for everything that you have, which is kind of,
well, not fleecing, but it's just like, do they have the players for it?
Well, yeah, I mean, like, we've seen so many, like, things getting shut down at the beginning of the year, right? I mean, like, recently did Rumble
Broken, what was it? Yeah, and Broken Edge, was that what? Bleeding Edge, that was another game that
down. Like, all that kind of stuff.
It was only a couple of months in there.
Yeah, I was like Rumbleverse did recently, which was that wrestling battle royale, which, wasn't even up for like 6 months. There's a bunch of stuff getting shut down, because it's like, games of service only work if you have enough people feeding into the funnel to give them enough money to keep it running, whether it's paid or free. And like, obviously Destiny has kind of, they've kind of, that maybe like best in class for the most part. I mean, obviously I know there are some different opinions on the quality of their content, but they definitely have that sort of that corner of the market. But I mean, like my, you know, and like, I don't begrudge people that, like, I get it. Like they need to keep there needs to be an incentive to keep people coming back. It's not the way I play video games. I'm much more of a, like, I want to have a singular experience and then move on to the next singular experience in the same way a film works. But I think that it's infected the business in such a way that it's kind of showing up in places where it shouldn't be. I mean, I'm sure you've seen the controversy about Suicide Squad, and recently their trailer got shown up, and we haven't talked about it on the show, but basically they did it at their at one of PlayStation's, I think, their State of Play, and they sort of showed it off.
Yeah.
And as much as people were excited for the next thing from Rocksteady, you know, the makers of the good Batman games, the only thing people talked about was the fact that it looked like a giant live service, like games as a service game, where it's like people were using all kinds of loot weapons and there was all kinds of currencies, and just like, it looked like it was just there. Like they already started talking about a battle pass, when people were expecting either something that was closer to Arkham or something that was closer to Borderlands, but not something that was kind of like Destiny.
I do feel a little bit sorry though, because like, I mean, obviously the case is, I mean, this is just my own opinion, and personally, maybe like the whole, like the creation of a game, like has to be a lot of future prediction of like, sure, where the industry will be. And I feel like maybe they went into the whole battle pass stuff when maybe that was just kind of a new idea, and then later on, and like, you maybe you can predict it, but you can't really predict if something's going to stick with people or if it's going to change over time. And the really disappointing thing about this is the really poor reception that Gotham Knights got, which is of course, again, not really a game as a service, but more of that grindy sort of Destiny 2 inspired sort of gameplay loop as well at times. So you can definitely kind of feel for them, because there's no way they knew that that's what they were doing as well.
Yeah, I mean, obviously there's been the again, putting the tinfoil hat on, was that like that game was a live service at some stage, basically given the way the currencies work and all that kind of stuff works in game, like sort of, like you said, Destiny model of having quite grindy repetitive content, and then apparently potentially just got like ripped out at the last minute when they realized that it was a non-starter. But yeah, like it's interesting to see, and it's I mean, like, from a business perspective, I can understand why it's hard to be like, no, this game should just be a singular experience that we make some money off of, and maybe we do some DLC down the line, when publisher comes to you and says, well, let's just make it a live service. We can just keep your studio funded. You'll have projects for the next, you know, 3 to 4 years. We'll think about doing a sequel. We'll do some larger content updates, but we'll just do some seasonal content that's relatively straightforward to make. I mean, again, relatively in terms of like, obviously I don't want to downplay the work that these developers put into these games, because it's not like snap your fingers, fucking Batman in a Christmas outfit shows up on your thing just like out of nowhere, right? Someone has to still design and do all the work.
I wonder, just out of interest, I wonder like if we'll ever see maybe a study or something, or even just some deep dive like piece into, you know, the effect that this may have on industry creatives, in the sense of having to work on the same project for years on end. Because I mean, I'd be interested. I mean, personally speaking, like, if like, I mean, this I won't say my own opinion, because that really doesn't matter in this scenario, but like, if you take, for example, like someone like Neil Druckmann, who was recently talking about the whole idea of like what Naughty Dog is working on next, he was kind of saying like, you know, they need to pick something that they're passionate about, because if they get 2 years down the line of developing into a game and they're burnt out by it, then it's going to, you know, it's going to be mediocre at the end. Whereas I imagine, like, you know, if you were working on, let's take Halo Infinite, for example, I mean, as much as I love Halo, I wouldn't want to be working on Halo for 10 years because that was the plan, right? Yeah. And if I was in the industry, and particularly like, even if like, if you just take it like as a creative idea of wanting a diverse portfolio of content to say you've done, if your portfolio is just 10 years of Halo work, like when that ends, what do you do then? Like, because you're 10 years older, people are looking for kind of more diverse portfolios. You've only got this Halo work, and maybe Halo has some more diverse designs that come in, but the art style relatively remains the same. I would be really interested to hear from like people who work in the sector who have worked on live service games. Destiny is probably another good example. And even Destiny's a little bit interesting because Lightfall is such a stark departure from other Destiny DLCs,
yeah,
in terms of visual style anyways. I would be interested to see like the toll that plays on people. Like I would be interested to see what the turnover rate of people working in those companies is. Like if they're working on, say, like a live service game, for how long is it for? Why is the reason they left? Is it because of burnout on a project or wanting to work on something new? Who knows? I don't know. But it's I think that'd be an interesting conversation or piece to have at some point in the future. And because I do think generally, like, if you're interested in anything or you like the job you're doing, there will be a stage where if you're doing the same stuff over and over again, it'll get repetitive, I imagine.
Yeah, yeah. Thinking about the people who are playing the repetitive content, thinking about the people who are making it as well. Exactly, right? It's an interesting one, right? And I think that, yeah, I'm like, I hope that it's the kind of thing where, I mean, because Halo Infinite is a fantastic example, right? Because there was there's recently been the controversy about, you know, people being like, hey, like Halo's get like 343 is getting a reshuffle, that kind of like that. They've kind of, Halo Infinite obviously has had a pretty rocky reception. Obviously it had a good launch in terms of the multiplayer stuff, but the live service part of the deal, as it were, was quite lacking in terms of the content, the seasonality. It really feels like kind of a thankless thing, right? Where, and again, this is, I know fuck all about the industry. I'm just an asshole talking on camera. But like from my perspective, you get, hey, we've made this, really, I mean, we've made one of the best first person multiplayer games ever in terms of like from a strictly mechanical point of view. Like Halo, nothing else feels like Halo. And love it or hate it, Halo, I mean, like Halo is one of the few games that like I got like quite deeply into in terms of multiplayer. And so like I played a little bit of Halo Infinite during a charity stream, you know, and I was like, hey, we're just gonna do it casually because, you know, we're at like, you know, we're like hour 10 and slowly melting.
I think I played with you guys.
Yeah, exactly. That's right. Exactly. So, and that was the kind of thing where it was like, we'll just do something like relatively casual. I'm like, Halo Infinite was great. Like I had such a great time playing that game. And then it was like, can you imagine making something that's like that mechanically like works so well. And then, you know, potentially having someone come to you and say, hey, we need to turn this into a service. We need to, like, if we're going to continue to make this game, and we are going to continue to make this game because it's going to be profitable, we need to do X, Y, and Z. We need to lock this kind of content. We need to make sure we have these kinds of systems and battle passes. We need to make sure the experience meter is this long instead of this long. And we want to make sure that if people wanted to get it to there, that they're probably going to want to cough up some money. And so, you know, you get pressured into making a game that is a product first and not necessarily a game second. And then on the other side of it, the minute something falls over, because you get people who are burnt out, people who don't want to be doing this kind of stuff, people who aren't passionate about doing this kind of content for these games, you get the community just going for the jugular on Twitter and Reddit and just trying to rip them apart, being like, where the fuck is this content? What, you know, what is this? Why are we still only on the second season? Where's Forge? Where's this? Where's that? Where's Battle Royale? Like, you know, it feels like a real thankless position to be in. So I can imagine that like the stories of the people leaving those places would be really, really interesting.
Yeah. Also, it there's something to be said, I think, for the paid DLC model, where it's like the free-to-play stuff, on paper, it seems great. And I mean, yeah, I mean, I won't bash either of them because I think they're both probably, they both have their benefits as models, but there was a certain level of like, if you were expecting something with paid DLC, it was going to release. Whereas with the free stuff, it can be so malleable and interchangeable. And it's weird that Halo adopted the live service model when it doesn't really need it. It's like one of those few games that doesn't need a live service, because it's like, it's the closest thing that Xbox has to something like Garry's Mod, because of Forge and custom games. There's constantly just more and more stuff. Like I went on to Halo Infinite there recently with a few friends, and I had fallen out of it for ages, and I kind of go back to it in spurts, and I play a lot of the multiplayer because I still really enjoy the gameplay loop. And we play custom game browser, and there's so much stuff in there. Like people have recreated like Peach's Castle from like Mario 64 and or Mario Sunshine, I think it was, or, you know, 64, Mario 64. Yeah. And they've done all this other great stuff as well, that like it feels like you're playing like just different games inside of Halo. And that's the one thing 343 has done extremely well, is how intuitive and how advanced Forge has become under them. Like Halo 5's Forge was probably the most advanced Forge. Well, not probably, it was the most advanced Forge Halo had seen. 4's was we'll talk about that, but Infinites was great as well. I mean, and it's still in beta, I think, as well, so there's probably more to come from that, but the fact that we've so much stuff already from it is just phenomenal. And it makes me sad, because it's the same thing again, like with Halo 5, where players came in really excited, were let down by the story or the campaign, or some aspect of the game outside of that, and then they left. And then if you were to come back and play it in maybe like a year or two's time, you'd be like, this is a new experience, this is a completely different game, and it's amazing. And you know, it's interesting, because you take a look at games like, say, Cyberpunk or No Man's Sky, and people are like, oh, these games have really, like, you know, this is the biggest comeback story in gaming. And then you've got like Halo over here, which is arguably doing this similar level of like really hard work and making some like really great improvements. And then you just don't see that be represented very well. And maybe that's because, you know, it's a first party owned title or whatnot, but I don't know the whole logistics behind it, but I really think Halo Infinite has come on leaps and bounds since its launch. And this is someone who like was very much like, I wasn't anti Halo Infinite. I was very much like, I don't know if this is really what I wanted after like 6 years. And you know, it's difficult to, like, I always kind of go back to this. It's really difficult to judge the way in which something was made based off the final product, because I know nothing about the work that went into it. So I'm not going to be like, oh, they had 6 years and they didn't do this. I was like, realistically, maybe they had like two or three, because they had to redo stuff. And, you know, there's probably stuff behind the scenes that's NDA'd and we don't know about. So I was like, yeah, no, I want to see more love towards Halo Infinite, because it is a much better game now, at least from a player's perspective. And as maybe as predatory some of the stuff of the store is, granted, yeah, I still have never gravitated towards buying anything outside of maybe the Battle Pass, which is €10, and I'm like, I will pay that's fine. And I've only bought one of them, because the great thing about Infinite's titles, which Overwatch doesn't do, by the way, which really pisses me off, is that you can go back to previous Battle Passes, whereas like I got really into Overwatch for a bit, bought one of the Battle Passes, spent maybe a day or two away from it, and I didn't finish the Battle Pass, and then I lost out on stuff at the end of the pass. And it's like, what am I paying for then? Like, am I paying for the like the experience or the benefit of being even able to access this stuff? It's like, it's not even paying to get the stuff, it's paying to get the chance of getting the stuff.
It's paying for the ability to play more of their game.
And it's like, oh, great. Whereas at least with Infinite, and props to Infinite as well, like they've had a number of battle passes that have come out for free, like seasonal battle passes, which have added new content. They're on season three now. So they've like three main core battle passes, which add a lot of new content to the game that I would more than happily spend a tenner on, that I'm probably not going to unlock for maybe a year or two, but I'm still going to be just plugging away at it whenever I play Halo Infinite. And that's what I really appreciate about it. I think Halo Infinite is, by all cases, not the best live service example, but it's probably, it's definitely one of the games that I've been coming back to and thinking like, this really doesn't get enough love, sort of thing.
Mm, yeah, I'm with you, and because I remember you did a spoiler cast with Cameron back in the day on when that first came out and that kind of stuff, and it was really interesting to kind of hear your thoughts and to hear them now and kind of how things have changed over the year and a half since that came out, which is
Jesus,
it's a weird thought, Jesus, yeah. Yeah, so thank you for the questions, guys.
I will. Can I point out two small petty things before industry standards that I hate? One is every game that adds in the Destiny cursor into its menus.
Yep.
Get rid of that shit. Yep. It doesn't need to be there. Keep that on PC. Number two, needing to be online to play games.
Arcane would potentially agree with you, considering that they're looking apparently at trying to pull out the online required component from Redfall. That was just in the news because people were getting up in arms about that, which is an interesting one. I don't know, we haven't got much in the way of news, but I want to talk to you a little bit before we wrap up around some of the stuff that is coming up in terms of, like, you know, games you're interested in and kind of anything like that, or things you've been playing. I don't know, like, is there anything on the Xbox calendar that you're kind of like, oh, actually, like, this is, you know, this year is looking interesting for this, that, and the other?
Not particularly, which is weird because, I mean, I found a lot of the games that I was looking forward to this year have already come and gone. Dead Space Remake, Resident Evil 4, which I'm playing at the moment, fantastic. I love it so much. Dredge was another one that kind of snuck up on me that I realistically, I think it's probably my one of my favorite games of this year, if not my favorite game of this year. And sure. That comes out on March 30th. And I really do recommend people to play that if they're even somewhat interested in what it looks like. In terms of stuff, this is the problem with it all as well. Is you forget what's actually coming out this year, and then you have to kind of equate, like, oh, will this come out this year? Will it be pushed to 2024? Maybe Spider-Man 2.
Oh, yeah.
I could be interested in that. Starfield, I will probably play, but I'm not particularly just here nor there on it. Like, Bethesda games have never been something that have, like, gripped me. I don't think I've ever finished a Bethesda game. Right. And it's not for a lack of trying. I've started 3, New Vegas, Fallout 4, all that stuff. I did like maybe 10 minutes of Skyrim and was like, nah, I'm not playing this. Which I know, sorry, blasphemy here. But
that's totally fair. Like I played a shitload of Skyrim when it first came out, but there have been so many re-releases and I can understand why that's like, it's not for everyone for sure. And as much as I enjoy it, it's not like I put it in my top 10 list or anything like that. I know people absolutely love that series and those games, but there's the games are definitely they definitely have their place, but they're not for everyone.
If it releases this year, I'll be very interested to try out Hollow Knight Silksong.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
But that's totally dependent because I think it's meant to come out this year, but I don't think we have an official release. Oh, we do, don't we? Didn't they do one recently? Or?
Yeah, well, I think they had one because the showcase they showed it at, they said everything was coming out within the next 12 months, which I think
Which technically isn't true now because of Starfield's delay.
Because of Starfield's delay, exactly, yeah.
Funny, I will probably end up playing Starfield purely for the fact that it releases on my birthday.
Oh, fantastic.
So I'm just like, maybe I won't play it on my birthday because that would be quite sad if I just sat down and played a game on my own for my birthday. At least I say so. I've done that years in past. That's how I always rein in the new year, to be honest.
Yeah,
But I'm trying to think. Xbox's calendar. See, the problem, if I knew everything that was coming out and like Redfall, I'm not too keen on. It's not really my sort of thing at the moment, or at least I haven't seen enough of it to care that much. Mm. As I said, Starfield is interesting and I'll look forward to seeing more of that. I'll be interested to see what indies come out though in the Xbox space because ID and Xbox always have some interesting stuff that releases and tends to kind of do very well.
I was going to say it has been a bit of a change for form that you haven't complained about a single indie game while you've been on the show this week. So
no, it's been really positive. It's like I've gotten media training since the last time we spoke, which I haven't, by the way. But like, I feel like maybe this is the perfect media training course. It's just like start out rough at the beginning and slowly get your way up to sounding a bit more professional.
I'm with you.
Oh, I suppose so. Well, I'm looking forward to Hellblade 2 if that comes out this year. There we go.
Yeah, because I think we just saw a demo for that earlier this week. They had like a little bit of a reveal.
The Unreal Engine 5.
Yeah, which looks absolutely fantastic.
Still very dark looking.
I mean, they have a theme. They're running with it.
I'm not going to say anything because it's actually interesting because I want to go back and play Hellblade because I remember we talked on the podcast once about Hellblade and I was like shitting on it to no end. And I do feel bad about it because Ninja Theory is kind of like, it's not a small studio anymore, but it kind of is.
They have a small studio mentality for sure.
Yeah, they're kind of in that same realm as like someone like Bloober Team.
Yeah,
they're in that,
double A space, large indie. Yeah,
yeah. Which funnily enough, I think there's more overlap with those companies than what I mean. Their president recently said something like they really wanted like be in that same area as Ninja Theory, which I was just like, what a random one, because they said either Ninja Theory or Naughty Dog, and I was like, those are two very different companies.
Very different. Just, too. I mean, like I guess from like a cinematic perspective of like how you would make your games being sort of more linear cinematic games, I guess maybe, but in terms of like production value and team size and you know hype, it's two pretty different beasts.
I think the big thing for this year, though, will be less about the games and the games industry and more about the greenlit adaptations of games we get to like TV or movies.
Yeah.
Which I hope we hear more about because, I mean, The Last of Us, yeah, I enjoyed it. I thought it was very good. I don't think it's the best adaptation of a game thing that we've seen. But like, I mean, if you take out like animated stuff, which is kind of counterproductive, but also kind of the case with a lot of people. Yeah, sure. It probably is. Yeah, I'd be interested to see what happens in that realm. But yeah, in terms of Xbox games, it's weird because 2023 is like apparently a huge year for Xbox, but it's a huge year for like everyone else. Like, I mean, I'm not really that interested in the stuff they have coming at the moment. Like end of 2021 was when I got really into the sort of the slated calendar they had for Xbox because I was kind of excited for both Halo Infinite and Forza Horizon 5. And since that, it's kind of like, if there's maybe a Gears of War announcement, I'll be a bit excited about that. which I'm not even a huge fan of that series, but it's more down my alley. I'd be interested to see what happens. But yeah, no, there's nothing really tickling my fancy at the moment. Spider-Man is the main one, but that's not even Xbox. That's about it.
I'm with you. I mean, like, I'm just kind of like glancing over the calendar at the moment and just kind of see if there's anything. It's like, yeah, you've got small things like Lies of P and things like that with the Suicide Squad and Dead Island 2. I mean, I'm very excited for the new Star Wars Jedi Survivor, but I'm just because I love Star Wars stuff. But
the thing is, when I see stuff like Lies of P, like, I mean, when I see them, and I'm sure they have their fans. For me, like, when I'm looking at the catalog, like, that looks like good padding for Game Pass.
Oh, sure. Like, I mean, I'm sure it'll be a fine game, right? But yeah, you're right. Like, it's not going to be like a tentpole release, as it were.
Hmm.
I've been asking this question a little bit because, like, you know, we're in March and there have been some great stuff. I mean, like, you know, we've had people are talking amazing stuff about Resident Evil 4, which I think is going to be a lot of people's game of the year contender at this stage. I'm definitely looking forward to getting my hands on it. Had stuff like Hogwarts Legacy, which has gone down, you know, very well in terms of like critically, and then like Dead Space Remake, which is like, there are definitely other things like community wise is a different story, but in terms of like,
it's definitely gone down. That's what I would say.
Sure, yeah, we'll say that, but I don't want to discount it by writing it off by saying that. I mean, a lot of people have enjoyed it, and it's been received pretty well critically in terms of like review scores. And then I guess, yeah, and like you said, like the Dead Space remake is really, really great. I mean, people have been loving Metroid Prime remake as well. It does really feel like it's kind of, we've gone back to the well a little bit of this first sort of quarter in terms of what people are really, really interested in. But
I would say 2023 is Nintendo's year to lose, realistically.
Agreed.
I mean, Metroid obviously was a bit of a shadow drop, but like, if Tears of the Kingdom is already, I think, for people, even though they haven't played it, is like, oh yeah, game of the year, which is kind of similar. It's kind of like FromSoft from last year, where like they'll have this huge game come out, and then it's just the rest of the conversation will just be what's coming second. Like, even though God of War got very close, and arguably, realistically, in terms of the awards it won, probably should have won game of the year last year, but
I can see
it. That's not me saying it. I didn't say that. I just saw people online saying that. Go give out to them people about that. But September is going to be mad, though, because you see the stuff. Apparently, Tony Todd is so funny because he's voicing Venom, but he's like the biggest leaker ever. He responded to some random fan on Twitter being like, looks like it's coming out in September. And it's just like, the next day he was just like, no, I'm not saying anything else about Spider-Man 2, because he wasn't meant to say anything. It's not announced. Like, just completely.
Not at all.
One hand, that's very frustrating for Insomniac, but at the second time, it's absolutely fucking hilarious. I love it.
It'll get a new story out of it, so can't be that bad.
Can you imagine like going into like Starfield at the beginning of September and having to like joke like, oh, will I play Spider-Man 2 next? Interesting. Similar, like, I mean, like, we've got, like, the last few months have been great, as you said. Like, I mean, Dead Space remake in January. I mean, particularly for survival horror fans, I want to mention, it's been fantastic. Like, I mean, we've been eating well. I mean, last year, I mean, we had very close to the end of the year with Signalis, which is probably one of the best indie games I've ever played.
Fantastic game.
Callisto Protocol was not great, but, you know, it's there, and it shows that the industry is still considering, like, this sort of survival horror genre in many ways. And, you know, it was interesting to see that take. Like, you know, it's like you watch, like, you know, when you watch a bad movie, you can still learn what mistakes it made, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely.
Dead Space Remake was phenomenal. I don't think anyone really expected it to be as good as it was. Mm-hmm. Resident Evil 4 Remake, again, phenomenal. It's so funny that they both came out so close to each other because the original Dead Space was inspired by Resident Evil 4. Here we are, part and parcel. Back at it again. It's like, yeah, it was like last year. It was like, the year is 2022. I'm going to see Avatar and going home to play Modern Warfare 2. It's like this year is like, oh, the year is 2023. I'm going to play Resident Evil 4 before diving into Dead Space. And it's just like, what's going on? It's like, it's weird time warp, like shenanigans stuff going on at the moment. Like, so.
I think it definitely feels like it's going to be a bit of a light. I mean, again, we're pre E3 at this point. Like, who knows what happens. You know, there probably potentially to be some other announcements that might come out, but I don't know. Like, I mean, the only other one that kind of we haven't really talked about is the Arcane is Redfall, right? Are you interested in it?
Not really. I don't know enough about it, to be honest. That's the problem. I know that, like, I was reading an interview with one of the developers who said that, like, they were kind of really inspired by Far Cry, and like those Far Cry games appeal to people, just not really to me.
Yeah.
I imagine maybe I'll play Redfall because I know it'll have multiplayer, so I'll probably end up playing it on Game Pass with a few friends, and I'll give that a go for maybe a week or two. But I don't think it's really, at the moment, it's not a mainstay. It's not something I'm hyped for. Like, the game I was most hyped for this year was Resident Evil 4, and that's out now, and I'm really enjoying that, and I'll probably just be playing that for the rest of the year, honestly. And anything else that comes out will be doing well to squeeze its time in. But yeah, no, it's strange. I'm not too fussed about Redfall, to be honest. I mean, I know a lot of people are kind of hyping it up. I don't know if a lot of that hype, at least for me, the people I've seen hyping it up are more hyping it up because of its exclusivity to Xbox, and that's not really, I don't think it being an exclusive game warrants hype. I think if it's going to be, like, if it looks good, it looks good. And Redfall, for what I've seen of it, looks fine. It just doesn't look like a game for me, to be honest.
Sure. Yeah, I'm kind of with you, especially when it, like, first revealed, it looked quite like Left 4 Dead, and I was like, Back 4 Blood came out, and that wasn't quite what people are after anymore. And then they were like, oh, no, it's more like Far Cry Borderlands co-op. I'm like, okay, maybe, but we'll see. I don't know. I mean, again, the fact that it'll be on Game Pass and you can easily get a group of four together, you know, because it's like there's very low barrier to entry, I think will probably be the main reason people play it. So, I mean, that's not too far. I think it's, what, May or something. So it'd be interesting to kind of see what that
is. Is it that close? Jesus.
I think so, yeah. It was relatively soon, because I think the year's just like disappearing. It's almost April, right? So, yeah, because you've got that, and then, and then I think it's like Forza and Starfield. So it's going to be, I mean, like, you know, Xbox has definitely got some stuff this year, but I'm kind of with you. I'm not like...
Diablo's releasing in June as well.
Yep. Which, you know, soon will be Xbox at some stage.
Well, apparently, it's releasing in June, but players will likely get into the servers in July.
Yeah. If you look at the Discord, Xbox Hall of Gamers, you can see a bunch of a few posts from my good friend Aftos and his adventures of trying to get into the queue. He's apparently having a great time. They really just need to start putting like little mini games or something in there. But, you know, I mean, it's Activision. They could just put Candy Crush on the queue screen. Like, it's the
or
same
just
company.
Put like that that Google T-Rex game where you're just jumping over the next one, your internet's off. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so I think we're coming up at about an hour and a half here, so I want to keep you for too long, because I know you got a big day ahead of you. I think, you know, is there, we'll basically just wrap it up. I think if like I said, if you want to come hang out with us on community, discord.io/hallofgamers, come hang out with us, ask questions. We greatly appreciate all the feedback. We've got a channel for this. We've got a channel for our word challenge, which I'll have a new clue for you. I'll post it after this, because I'm going to be away next week, so I don't want to keep you guys stranded for too long. But if you don't know what the word challenge is, every month or so I come up with a game title. It's usually something relatively obscure, and I'll release a clue for it each week. And if you put the right title in, gift shows up, you win $20 New Zealand, and I try and figure out some way of converting that into a currency that people can use. Usually some sort of dollary do or European gold farthing or whatever it is the rest of the world uses. I don't know. You can go in there and check it. There's only one clue at the moment. And the first clue is that the game has more than two words in its title, which I know is not super helpful, but that's kind of the point, because otherwise, if people guess it every week, I would run out of all of the Patreon budget. So yes, I am stringing people along. Because Zoom is $280 a year.
Jesus.
Yeah. Which, so this podcast is going to at least February, because I'm getting my money's worth out of that. Speaking of our patrons, patreon.com/hallofgamers. If you do want to give us some cash, we greatly appreciate it. I want to give a thanks to Lee Howard, Mikhail KV, Chapters, Natolinator, Firehawk, Mad Lefty, G Spaceman, Admiral Awesome, Keo, Happy Moogles, Kung Fu Skills, Hawk and, Hack and Pwn, Cavaliers 07, Old Mate Clown, Mark B, and McLovin Legend. We greatly appreciate your support. Without it, we would literally not be able to afford to do the show. And as always, we do the show live on Twitch. You can come say hi. Xbox Hall of Gamers, come hang out in the chat. We've got Keo here. We had Admiral here for a bit. We've got we've got Cameron messaging us over from his trip over to PAX East, which he'll be reporting on when he gets back. So I'm excited to hear about that. It sounds like he's having an amazing time. And if you want to contact us in other ways, hallofgamerspodcast@gmail.com or at hallofgamerspod on Twitter. You can write your questions into pretty much any of those channels, but the Discord's the easiest one. And if you want to guest on the show, like our good friend Odrin here, hit us up. We're doing a bit more of a rotating cast things as we have kind of people in and out. The format's probably going to change up a little bit. We'll see how it goes. But if you're interested, we can put you on the list. We've got a few exciting guests coming up, so stay tuned. All right, and now, Odrin, this is the best part. I want you to shill more than you've already been doing. But I want all the details. I want the socials. I want the website. I want everywhere. I want I was going to make a joke that I can't make on Twitch. Everywhere that you want people to check out your stuff.
I'm still terrible at doing this, by the way. Pretty much all of my stuff is, you can find me on Twitter at Odrin Johnson, O-D-H-R-A-N is how you spell the beginning of that because it's Irish. Alongside that, if you want to see the Gaming Sandbox stuff as it comes out, you can see that over on Twitter as well, at Gaming Sandbox _. That's the same, I believe, on Instagram and Facebook, if anyone still uses those platforms. I don't know if they do. Alongside that, though, you can find us over on YouTube. Gaming Sandbox is the YouTube channel. It should be the first result if you look that up, hopefully. If it's not it'll probably be some crypto game. Just delete that and look for whatever. I keep saying alongside that. The final thing, then, is you can check the website out. There isn't anything on it at the moment since the beginning of January, so feel free to kind of, if you want to peruse and critique old stuff I've done, because I don't do that enough myself in my own head, feel free to go and do that. Gaming-sandbox.com is the website link for that. So yeah, I think that's everything. Also, I suppose I should probably show at the end as well, go check out Complete Xbox as well, because they've been fantastic to both me and to the rest of the other creators in the Complete Xbox Collective. CompleteXbox.co.uk, I believe, is the correct URL. They do loads of great stuff, and they have a load of fantastic writers in there that are much better at writing than I am, so you should go and give them a look. So yeah.
I will echo some of that. They are some good writers. You should definitely check out their stuff and Odrin's stuff as well. He does a lot of good work, even though he wouldn't say.
Yeah, if you want,
And for me, as always, you can find me on NeoMaster and everything, True Achievements, Xbox, and Discord. I don't make any kind of content. This is literally the only thing I do on the internet. I don't know why you would want to talk to me, but I'm there. I guess it's fine. That's going to wrap up episode 72. Thank you very much, Odrin, for joining us. It's been an absolute pleasure to have you on, as always. You're one of our best guests. And I don't just say that to every guest, just most of them. the ones I don't say to, you know who you are. But that's episode 72. We will catch you guys next week. See you later.